Safety, dependability, and power. Chevy Silverado isn't happy unless the work is hard and the day is long. No wonder Silverado is America's number one best-selling retail pickup truck. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
No one's going to feel sorry for us, but it's important that we get back to work. The position rooms are locked in. We got a defined plan, and we got to execute that plan.
He's delusional.
Delusional? I'm not delusional.
The WGN Radio Football Podcast.
Looks like man-to-man coverage. Fourth and three. Game on the line. Williams lofting one for a dude. He caught it!
When those big moments happen, you kind of have an idea and trust and belief that you're all on the same page. And, you know, right then and there, it showed up.
It's the WGN Radio Football Podcast, sponsored by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be.
It's winning time. Let's get this show on the road.
Here's Kevin Powell.
Welcome into a fresh episode of the WGN Radio Football Podcast. Joining me once again is Herb Howard from the Bigs, covers the Bears, does it well. And Herb, thanks for jumping on once again. And here we are with the Chicago Bears, where it just we've been down this road. We have. They're 10 games into the season, 7 games left, and what's the conversation being had? Is Matt Eberflus going to continue as the next head coach? I don't care if they win or lose anymore. It's only about the development of the quarterback. We've been down this road. We've been down it with Justin Fields and Mitch Trubisky. It is the same old story, Herb, where it 4 straight losses, and now we're all like, oh, okay, I guess it's just about the quarterback, and they'll probably find a new head coach in the offseason.
It is officially a trilogy. This is part 3 of the same movie that we have seen before. And the problem is, it's been very predictable, right? So this isn't a, you know, hindsight conversation. This is the conversation that a lot of people were having before decisions were made after last season about what you're going to do at the quarterback position, what you're going to do at coordinator, what you're going to do ultimately at head coach. And we all knew that unless this thing came together perfectly, unless Shane Waldron was the OC that Chicago has been dying for years, and unless Caleb was, you know, this once-in-a-lifetime rookie who could come in and be dominant instantly, not that he won't develop into that, but come in and be dominant instantly, we were probably going to end up here. And it's no surprise, it's very familiar, and for Bears fans, it's quite unfortunate.
Yeah, it's frustrating. And I think for a lot of Bears fans, a lot of them thought they should have just moved on from Matt Eberflus after last season. And apparently he showed enough, and Ryan Poles thought that Flus did a good enough job to keep things together, I guess, at Halas Hall, even though last year was filled with a ton of drama and a lot of the 3 really, really bad losses last year, 2 really, really bad ones this year. More than 2. I'm talking about the 2 heartbreakers, Washington and Green Bay, and then 2 duds against Arizona and New England. I wonder how much differently the past few weeks look if or not that Hail Mary connecting in Washington. But it is where they are right now. And you know, even the Shane Waldron hiring, I don't think that even sparked a ton of optimism, Herb. You know, I when they initially named Waldron after this lengthy search, personally, I was just like, okay. I mean, Seattle was good moving on from him, you know. And I'm like, is this the guy really? And then you don't have an offensive minded head coach. It just all felt a little messy to me. That was always kind of like simmering as all this optimism and hope was going into this season, and Caleb entering this great situation, one of the best situations a first overall pick has entered, and Keenan Allen and DJ and all of that. I was always kind of like, I don't know about this coaching staff. I mean, Flus was kind of just, you know, he was just hanging out like, okay, sure, I'm still here. This is great. We've added all these pieces. And I think a lot of us were like, are we sold on the coach? You're bringing in a quarterback who's supposed to be the savior here, and this coach might be gone after a year, and that's what it's looking like.
Yeah, it was especially, you know, disappointing because of the offseason that was the coaching hiring cycle this year, right? There were so many like hot and top tier candidates from head coaching to offensive coordinator, and then to stand status quo at head coach, but then also bring in an underwhelming pick at offensive coordinator when there were so many other selections that were available. So everybody's talking about, you know, how the energy has changed on the offensive side of the ball since time last week. You interviewed him for the same job. You like in his first press conference as an offensive coordinator, I looked and I said, you interviewed this guy and you interviewed the guy we've been interviewing for the past 9 weeks and you chose the other one. Like, yeah. It just didn't make sense. But you also had Cliff Kingsbury. You had all these other people who were available, and this is what you settled on. You know, ultimately, you know, probably it's going to be the coaching staff that takes the blame for this, but eventually it's starting to get closer and closer to GM Ryan Poles' door in terms of some of these decision-making, the process that's been taking place, and it just has not worked to the level that they hoped for, certainly not this year. We'll see, you know, what they look like over these last, you know, seven games, and, you know, can Caleb continue to improve? Can the offense continue to look better as they did start to do last week? But, you know, this isn't going to be a playoff season for the Bears. Everybody understands that at this point, and it's a big, big disappointment.
It is, and especially when it kind of felt that things might be a little different at Halas Hall with Kevin Warren and Ryan Poles. And as of right now, it feels the same as the previous regime, the previous two, right? Where this is the same old story. And it's tough to wrap your head around it, Herb, that this is where they're at. Now, I will say this. I thought Caleb played pretty well against Green Bay, had some big-time clutch throws late in that game. I'm still a big-time believer in Caleb, that he can be the guy that can lead this franchise for a long time. You just really start to worry about the organization ruining his trajectory as a quarterback in the NFL. But he is only 10 games through his rookie season. What's your Caleb meter at? How are you feeling about QB1?
Yeah, I feel good about Caleb. I think that, you know, you continue to see all the physicals that we heard about and the ones that we knew that he had. You continue to see that he's putting in the work. He's got to command the line of scrimmage. You know, he has the fortitude to come up big in the biggest moments, right? He stays calm. He makes big throws. You know, it's not often that you see a Bears team or a Bears quarterback on 4th-and-3 put it 20 yards in the air and then put on the money to convert, put you in position to win the game. So, you know, I'm still very impressed by what I've seen from Caleb Williams, but everything else around him matters. It matters what's happening at offensive coordinator. It matters what's happening at head coach. It matters what's happening on the offensive line. All these things matter in terms of his ability or not to reach his ceiling. I still think his ceiling is very, very high. So I don't have many concerns about him as an individual player or quarterback, but I have lots of concerns about all of the factors surrounding him and how that will positively or negatively impact his ability to develop into the player that he thinks he can be, that we all think he can be.
I don't mean to pile on Shane Waldron here, but I will say just the first press conference from Thomas Brown at Halas Hall and the difference of the delivery from Thomas Brown to Shane Waldron and just the overall Shane Waldron pressers were a little tough at times, Herb. You know, not that he was saying anything cringy or anything like that. It was just Thomas Brown's a confident man. Thomas Brown has a clear vision and delivery when talking. It just felt different, and it looked different with the team against Green Bay.
Yeah, there's a certain command that certain people have to stand in front of a room and get people to believe in you, get people to follow you, get people to, you know, hear what you're saying, and that one, they can translate onto the field, right? And I think that I would have to imagine, KP, that it was the same way. These two men were the same way in their interviews to be the Bears' next offensive coordinator. And for me, I don't understand how both of those two men could sit in front of you for an hour or 2 hours or however long the process was, and then you come away and say, yeah, Waldron was more impressive than Brown. I don't know how you can do that looking at those two men talk.
Right, and Shane Waldron, that name, I don't think I knew that name until they hired Shane Waldron. It's not like Shane Waldron was talked about in the football world as some offensive mastermind. If he was, I missed it, Herb, because when Shane Waldron's name came up in the hiring process, I was like, I've never heard of Shane Waldron. So you had to do some research there.
You had to do a lot of homework. And I don't know what you found, KP, but when I did my research, it was a very mixed bag. It was very he was all right. Some people were like, no, he's really good, and he's a great communicator and a great teacher. I was like, great communicator, I don't see that. But okay. And then I also heard from some of his players, famously like Jackson Smith and Jigba, like, oh, and I think that, you know, that's kind of what you saw. It was very underwhelming, but not just the underwhelming press conferences. Like, listen, you can be whatever personality you want to be, right? On Sundays, what's happening? And you see a lot of, you know, just inept play calling, lack of production, mind-boggling decisions. And that, as much as anything, why I was confident that Thomas Brown was going to be an improvement. He can't come in and change the system in the middle of the season, but he can absolutely not choose to give the ball to the backup center on the goal line. Mm-hmm. He can absolutely not choose to run speed option left, you know, on fourth and goal. Like, he cannot choose to do those things. And just by doing that, it's more of an improvement. But also, communicating with your players, the sense of belief that he's able to instill in them. I think you saw that on Sunday. And unfortunately, you know, they were close to walking away with the win. It didn't happen for them, but they'll get another big test here on Sunday with the Vikings and Brian Flores bringing that defense into Soldier Field.
Yeah, also one more note on Waldron. I remember hearing that he liked to use the tight ends and two tight ends. In week one, Cole Kmet was barely on the field. So I was like, okay, we're missing something here. But, you know, again, not to pile on Shane Waldron. I'm sure a good guy and all that. But that was a disaster, a horrible hire by Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus. And hopefully Thomas Brown can continue to bring this offense some kind of spark. But, yes, you mentioned it. Vikings now, they bring the heat. Caleb, for most of the year, has not been great against the blitz. He was pretty good against Green Bay. Against the blitz on Sunday, but this is going to be a tough task for the Bears at Soldier Field Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, the first thing you got to do to beat the blitz is identify it, right? You got to recognize it and have a pretty good idea of where it's coming from and where the answers are pre-snap. Now, Brian Flores is good enough, and you know his players are good enough to kind of give you a different look post-snap, and then you got to kind of process that information as quickly as you can. But to give yourself any chance at all, you got to be aware of the pre-snap. And I remember asking Caleb in the offseason, you know, where did he feel his game was furthest away from where he wanted it to be? He said it was in blitz recognition and picking those things up and figuring out where those answers are. And I thought he's gotten better at that throughout the season. I thought he's improved throughout the season at just recognizing it, using his cadence as a weapon to identify where these people are coming from. And then catch them where they aren't. Throw it where they came from. I thought he's gotten a lot better at that throughout the course of the season. He's going to need his absolute best performance with that, you know, on Sunday against his Vikings defense. But he's also going to need an offensive lineman that's going to be able to help him. Not only help him identify these pressures, but withstand them when they come and give him just that extra half second to get them out. Going to take the Bears' best offensive performance if they're going to have a chance to win on Sunday.
Yeah, I asked Cole Kmet after that Green Bay game, which was a heartbreaker, especially for a guy like Kmet. He talked about it. He's like, I've never experienced a win over at Green Bay, and Kmet gets the rivalry as well as anybody. But I asked him the biggest difference between Thomas Brown and Shane Waldron, and when it came to the whole operation and play calling and things like that, and he said it was moving. Things were just moving quicker. Mm-hmm. You know, he talked about Caleb just getting in and out of the huddle. Some of those little bubble screens that they hit with DJ early on, those just seem to be moving quicker. Where at times when those don't work, they are ugly, right? It just looks slow, and receivers get tackled in the backfield, and everybody gets all upset. But when they do hit, and they're crisp, and they're clean, and they're fast, you can pick up a quick 5-6 yards. And they did that with DJ Moore in that game. And I think like stuff like that, it was clear that everybody was just a little tick faster.
Yeah, it's about when and how you call those types of plays. Everybody knows the Bears are going to call screens, but when are you going to call them? Out of what formations are you going to call them? Where are you going to throw them? Which side of the field? To the boundary or to the field? And so those types of things matter. And you can definitely see that the operation was just a lot smoother. You heard Caleb Williams say, the plays are getting into me a lot faster. And I'm very curious. I just didn't want to keep dragging this on as the week went through. But I'm very curious about whether or not Thomas Brown was already calling what would have been, you know, the final play before Coach Eberflus decided to just shut it down and kill the clock before attempting the 46-yard kick. Because the way he was bringing those plays in, I bet he was already a play or two ahead. And the moment that previous play ended, he was probably already calling that next play into Caleb Williams. And they're like, wait, stop. No, we're done. Uh-huh. Okay. You know, so I think that he's certainly been somebody who has commanded the room better. You've heard those things from the players. He's tried to move on quickly. He handled his first press conference very, very well. There were lots of questions thrown at him trying to, you know, bring up the problems or trying to bring up Shane Waldron, you know, trying to bring up the tough position that he was in. He handled all of those things very, very well about, you know, how he improved things without giving away any state secrets, you know, to Green Bay or Minnesota or anybody else. He just seems very comfortable, you know, in his skin as a coordinator, as a coach. And I think that'll serve Caleb and their offense well going forward.
Going back to that Green Bay, the decision for Flus not to run one more play, where did you stand on all that?
Yeah, I thought it was egregious. I just don't understand it, right? And it's this negative mindset that some coaches have, and other coaches have a more positive mindset that things are going to go our way. And I just feel that way. I feel like that's true about life. Like, if you are a more positive but proactive person, say, no, I believe in what we're doing here. I believe this will work out. And not for the sense of saying, oh, this is, you know, the safest route, or this is the way that we can try not to lose. How about we try to win? How about we keep our foot on the ground? How about we get as close as we possibly can to the point where, you know, we've seen situations where Aaron Rodgers will go down the field in 50 seconds on teams, and they will get as close as he possibly can to the point where he's walking off the field already clapping as the field goal team comes on, because we know this is a tip shot. This isn't a 46-yard, hold your breath, see what happens situation. Well, I don't know why you would settle on that type of kick when you got a timeout, you got 36 seconds left. You can run another play or two if you want, but you're worried about, well, what if the start? Well, then you just go on one. You can go on set. There are ways to prevent a false start. You can do a lot of things. Well, now I'm worried about, are we going to fumble the ball? We've lost two fumbles on offense this year. You're worried about that's going to happen on this particular snap? What about a holding call? Listen, what about getting the kick close enough that we can make it? What about getting the kick close enough to where our kicker, who's known to have a low trajectory on long kicks, does not have to have such a low trajectory? He can kick the ball straight up in the air because he's not worried about driving it through the wind in Chicago. It wasn't a very windy day on Sunday, but the trajectory was the same because it's a longer kick. And so it didn't make sense to me. Like, you can explain it away, right? You can talk about the negative possible outcomes. Those are real. But why is that your mindset as opposed to, no, we're going to pick up 4 or 5 more yards. Maybe we bust it and pick up 10. Maybe you bust and take it to the house like the Chargers did in the game on Monday night. So, like, why aren't you thinking that way instead of thinking all of these, you know, just morbid thoughts about what can go wrong?
Yeah, I'm totally with you. And I actually, on that drive following the two sacks to start it, and then Caleb rallied and picked up the first downs, those big-time throws we were talking about, I actually thought, I'm looking at the clock, I'm looking at them navigate the field, I'm like, okay, right now this is they're doing what good teams do. They're milking the clock, they're moving the chains, they're picking up big plays. And after that big, I think it was Keenan caught it. Was that a third down pickup where he caught it? And then that was it. And then there was kind of this, like, everyone's like, wait, what are you doing here? And like, the players are still out there, and there's this, I'm like, there it is. There it is, because things were moving. Yeah. Caleb made big plays, and then there was this moment where it's like nobody knew what they were going to do. Everyone was out there, and it just looked confusing, and then you're like, okay, here we go. But you know, leading up to it, I'm like, okay, this is what you do. You milk the clock, move it, get it in a position, and yeah, I'm with you. I don't know why you wouldn't. Percentages go up the closer you are to the field goal. So didn't love it.
Kyro's never missed from 40 or closer, never.
Right.
70 for 70, like, and so you understand those things, but just also understand that we've got the defense on their heels, right? We've got them on their heels. We just hit them for a couple of big plays. We just hit them for another first down. They're on their heels. Like, let's go. Like, just let's go while we have the momentum. And why you would just choose to kill that? This doesn't make sense. And this isn't a hindsight thing. I sit next to Nick Moriano on the booth. I was like, what are they doing? Run another play, and I wasn't the only one. Like, it just didn't make sense to sit on that. It's like everybody can Monday morning quarterback and say, "Oh, the decision didn't work." In the moment, that decision didn't make sense, and you know, ultimately, it's one of the factors that cost them the game. I'm not saying it's the biggest thing, but it's one of the factors that cost them the game. Sure, you got to block. Sure, you got to do all those things. Sure, the referees could have, you know, made the call on you know, interfering with the long snapper. Sure, but one of the things that factored into it was the fact that their head coach chose to play, let's say passive instead of aggressive.
Yeah, and to your point, Green Bay on their heels after those first downs and the Bears are in Packers territory. If you're the Packers and you see the Bears settling for a 46-yarder, it's not ideal, but they're probably thinking, great, sure, like you move the ball on us here, but if you're sure, settle for a 46-yarder. We'll take our chances here. Not to mention they had game plan. They had game planned all week. They knew that. The players in the locker room talked about they believe the interior part of the Bears line on that unit was vulnerable. coupled with the fact that Cairo has a lower trajectory, and they thought all week they were going to get one. So the Bears said, sure, fine, we'll settle for a 46-yarder. If you're Green Bay, you're like, damn, we let them drive down the field, but also, like, okay, we kind of like our chances here.
Yeah. I think Green Bay understood that, and I thought they understood that they had a better chance of winning with that kick coming from the 46 than they did if the Bears had continued to play offense. They were tired. The Bears were in rhythm. And I think Green Bay understood that, but to your point, they also understood that, you know, they had a strong chance of blocking a kick that day. I think they were probably thinking they could have blocked the 53-yarder earlier, but I think they still felt good about their chance to get the 46.
Yeah. It's another painful one, and it's been six full years since, almost six full years since the Bears last beat the Packers. Painful, Herb. Quick little preview for Sunday against the Vikings. What's your prediction for the matchup?
I haven't settled on a score yet, but I'll come up with one real quick for you. It's going to come down to whether or not that, you know, Caleb can, you know, identify and find answers for the exotic pressure. Now, that's not going to be the whole game. They aren't going to blitz on every single play. So the key, more than what happens on those, you know, third and eights or third and nines, is what happens on first and 10, right? Can you get yourself to second and six? Can you get yourself to third and three so that you don't have so many situations where Brian Flores can dial up these exotic pressures on your rookie quarterback and your ever-changing offensive line. So, you know, I think the game's going to come down to that. Ultimately, I think that the Vikings, you know, defense is a little too good. Plus, they have playmakers on offense, Justin Jefferson and others. I think the Vikings will come in. I think the Bears will fight hard. They'll play well. But ultimately, I think the Minnesota Vikings walk away with a victory. I'll say 24-20 Minnesota.
24-20, that's Herb Howard. He covers the Bears for the Bigs. Herb, appreciate it as always.
Always a pleasure, KP. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks again to Herb for joining me. Thanks to Ernie Skatton for his help producing the podcast. And thank you for listening. This was episode 94 of the WGN Radio Football Podcast.